And then next Monday, Tuesday, Mara's speaking here.
Monday, Tuesday.
Only Tuesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday. Okay. Monday still we can keep the class.
Okay, so Monday we can do class. Okay. And Tuesday we'll have to see whether or not we can do class because everyone will go to Mara's class. So. Might be able to be here, but even if I do upstairs, it's just going to close. So. Okay, so next Monday we definitely have class. Tuesday we'll see because Beta Vyas Puri Maharaj is here. He'll be giving a seminar here in the theatre on Tuesday night. So we may or may not do Bhakti Vedanta so everyone can join. We'll let you know next Monday. Okay, so does anyone remember anything from chapter 10 so far? Last week? Yeah, we covered the divine qualities because we're discussing the demons and the demigods. After Mohini Murti has taken the nectar and given it all to the demigods, the demons have attacked the demigods and there's a huge fight which is taking place at this point in time. So tonight we'll hear about the finish of the battle. And then chapter 11 tomorrow night we'll hear more about what takes place. And we'll hear about the demoniac qualities. Last week we covered the divine qualities, the qualities we should aspire for. And now we'll begin to cover the demoniac qualities, or the qualities that we should avoid in devotional service, based on chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called Divine and Demoniac Qualities. Okay, so verses 28 to 57. O King, Maharaj Bali fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Taraka, Varuna with Heti, and Mitra with Praheti. So Maharaj Bali, at this point in time, he is the head of the demons. He is the grandson or great-grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, who we heard about in Canto 7. So in Canto 8, coming up soon, we'll hear about the pastimes of Bali Maharaj. He also is a glorious devotee of the Lord, even though he's taken birth in a demoniac family. So we cannot judge someone. Actually, in Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur says, it's an offense to judge a devotee according to his past or what he was before he became a devotee. So if you think that, well, someone was born like this, they're born like that, they're born in a particular country or particular birth, particular family, and you judge that person based upon what they're like. Just like sometimes in ISKCON, sometimes we hear it going around that if one wants a guru, one has to take initiation from an Indian-bodied guru because Western people are fallen. And because we are fallen, we cannot give instruction to others. So therefore, sometimes it happens like that. There is this misconception based on the bodily concept of life. But Haridas Thakur has clearly said that you cannot judge someone based upon their past. You cannot say, oh, this devotee did that, or he did that, or he used to not follow the regulative principles, or he was born in a particular body. Or Haridas Thakur even says that you cannot judge someone based upon defects they have in the current body. One devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, if you're a pure devotee, why do you need to wear glasses? And Prabhupada said, that is material. That is not spiritual. So you cannot judge someone based upon their body, some defects we have in our body, or some past apparent defect which was there, or our birth from the past. So here we're hearing the Bali Maharaj, even though he's a great devotee, he's taken birth as the leader of the demons. But we'll see in the next few chapters that actually he is a great devotee, he's a pure devotee, much better than all the demigods. And Kartikeya is there, he's also mentioned. Kartikeya is the son of Lord Shiva and Parvati. He was conceived to become the commander-in-chief of the demigods. And he has his own planet. Which planet is the planet of Kartikeya?
Kailash.
No, he has his own planet. Which planet is the planet of Kartikeya, the god of war? Yeah, Mars. Now you see Mars, if you look at Mars at night time, it has a red glow or twinkle. It's always vibrating reddish. There's a number of planets in the sky that do that. But Mars always has a reddish glow. That is Kartikeya. He's like almost like the emblem of the mode of passion. It's like he's born as a warrior, extremely powerful. Yamaraj fought with Kala Nava, Vishwakarma with Maya Danava, and Twashta with Shambhara, and the sun god with Virochana. So this would have been an amazing fight to see. The demigod Aparajita fought with Namuchi, and the two Ashwinikumara brothers fought with Vrishapava. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigod controlling air fought with Puloma, and Shumba and Nishumba fought the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who is called Bhadra Kali. So you see the sun god is fighting with 100 sons at once. If you read Mahabharata and you read the battle, the description of the battle, Karna was also at one point in time, he fought the entire Pandava army by himself. And it's just Karna versus everyone. That's how powerful these personalities are. Because Karna is the son of Surya. So you see here the father is also doing the same thing. He's fighting against hundreds of warriors simultaneously. That's how powerful these warriors were. Much more powerful.
Was on the side of demigod.
No, Durga is a demigod.
But then Shumba and Shumba for the supreme and powerful material energy of Durga Devi.
Who is known as Bhadra Kali.
Shumba and Shumba are demigods.
Yeah. I don't think that she'd be fighting with it.
You mentioned demigods and then the other is reversed from that.
Yeah. I think she would be fighting with the demigods, but not 100%. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, suppressor of enemies, Arindama, Lord Shiva fought with Jamba, and Vipavasu fought with Mahishasura. Iwala, along with his brother, Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmasha fought with Cupid. The demon Utkala with the Matrika demigoddesses. Brihaspati with Shukracharya. And Shainaschara, Saturn with Narakasura. The Maruts fought Nivatikavaj. The Vasus fought the Kalakeya demons. The Vishwadeva demigods fought the Poloma demons, and the Rudras fought the Krodha Vasha demons, who were the victims of anger. So someone might think this is boring, but actually it's extremely purifying because it is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So even if you don't know who these people are, you get purified just by hearing the sound vibration of the Bhagavatam. Even sometimes Prabhupada was in India, and he would lecture in Hindi, and he would tell all of his disciples to listen. So they would sit there with Prabhupada on the stage, 30 or 40 Western disciples. They had no idea what Prabhupada was talking about. But they would sit there, and Prabhupada said, the sound vibration is purifying. So even if we don't understand everything, we get purified just by hearing these personalities. All of these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit and attacked one another with great strength. All of them desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like bhushundis, chakras, clubs, rishtis, patishas, shaktis, ulmukas, prasas, parashwadas, nistrimshas, lances, parigas, mudgaras, and bindi palas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and the demigods and the wheels of the chariots, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space, as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over the space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. So, Jagannath Rampal.
The cloud of dust covered the entire horizon. So, the cloud of dust covered the entire horizon. But when drops of blood sprayed up as far as the sun, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. A point to be observed here is that although the blood is stated to have reached the sun, it is not said to have reached the moon. Apparently, therefore, as stated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, the sun, not the moon, is the planet nearest to the earth. We have already discussed this point in many places. The sun is first, then the moon, then Mars, Jupiter, and so on. The sun is supposed to be 9 crore 30 lakh miles above the surface of the earth. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the moon is 1600,000 miles above the sun. Therefore, the distance between the earth and the moon should be around 9 crore 50 lakh miles. So, if a space capsule were traveling at the speed of 18,000 miles per hour, how could it reach the moon in 4 days? At that speed, going to the moon would take at least 7 months. That a space capsule on a moon excursion has reached the moon in 4 days is therefore impossible.
Shula Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Any points?
He always maintained that he never eat moon. Always, in every situation.
Anything else?
Many devotees' faith was shaken when Prabhupada was actually present on the planet. They were showing on the that the moon, people are landing on the moon. And at that time, Prabhupada said, no, this is not true. And I don't remember the story, but when the devotee left Krishna consciousness because his faith got shaken, that okay, Prabhupada's talent, they are showing on the that you are landing, and still Prabhupada's talent, that no, this is not the moon that they are landing on. And then some years later, we realized that, you know, science is that they're saying that they will go to the moon actually. So whatever was come out of the acharyas or whatever is true.
Yeah, we should believe everything that's on television. It's an important principle. Television always tells the truth. So. Any other points? You can look up the moon landing on the internet. There's lots of
controversy
about it. There's even one. There's one. By video, they show they got the astronauts jumping, and then a cat runs across the set. So I don't know if that was just made up, or if that's some old footage, and then they had to reshoot it or something. I don't know what was taking place. Seems like most likely it was just staged. It was just Hollywood. Even recently, the man who produced 2001: The Space Odyssey, which is a very famous film, his name was Stanley Kubrick. He was a very famous Hollywood director. Apparently, recently, because he's passed away, his wife said that he directed the moon landing. So, yeah, you hear these things all the time. So, we really don't know exactly what happened like that. But it seems that it was a staged event. But Prabhupada is saying here that It did not happen in the sense that the astronauts did not go to the moon, as was depicted. Now, Prabhupada says in the purport that the moon is further away than the sun. So does anyone remember from Canto 5 how we clarify these things, how we describe these things? We went through all of this at the end of Canto 5.
Because they actually carried an energy. We talked about the helios. Yeah.
That's part of it, but that doesn't fully describe the description of why. Why is it that we say, because according to modern science, the moon is closer than the sun. But then in the Vedas it says the moon is further away than the sun. So how do we understand it? The modern understanding is the sun is further away than the moon, but Bhagavatam is saying the moon is further away than the sun. So how do we clarify that? Because it's confusing. That's one way of answering it, yeah, but that may not be.
Because it's so positive, we can't reach and we can't measure it, so we can't decide, we don't know, we can speculate. And this has been proven many times right. But what confuses me, you know, they say sun is before the moon, and after is the moon, and after is the Rahu. Sun is the smaller, moon is the bigger planet, and Rahu is even bigger. So how Rahu, which why Rahu eclipses sun and moon? It usually should be between the earth. Rahu is after them, it's further.
Mm. Yeah, well, if it says
how
that,
will eclipse sun?
If it says that, that's even more confusing.
Yeah.
Like that. So what it means is that the sun is further away than the moon. We should get this clear, because science says that, and that is actually the fact. The sun is further away than the moon. The Bhagavad Gita says the moon is further away than the sun, but it doesn't mean by physical distance. It means that in the universe, we explain in Canto 5, there are different planetary systems, 14 planetary systems, and they're shaped like, you could say, like dishes, or like chakras, or like plates, like a disc, like that shit. So they're all going like that, and then if you go up above, so the moon is in the higher orbit than the sun, in the sense Earth is here, sun is going like that, Earth is going like that, sun is going like that, and moon is going above that. But physically, the moon is closer to the Earth because the sun is going right out in this way. So the chakra, or the sphere in which the sun travels, that is closer to the Earth. In other words, if you look at it like in terms of like steps going up, the step on which the sun travels, which is above the Earth, that is closer. But the actual planet is not closer. So you have to understand these things, probably. No, because you just have to understand subtly what the Shastra is saying. Yeah, but we showed these the videos which were made by Sataputra and everything back when we studied Canto 5, and that this is how Sataputra explains it. Otherwise it becomes difficult to understand.
That means the moon is practically closer.
It is closer, yeah. That's what I'm telling you, it is closer. That's how Sataputra explains it. When the Vedic planetarium is created, you'll see that's the way it'll be explained. So it's the sun's... Do you understand what I'm explaining?
No.
Whether or not you believe it or not, but this is the way it's explained. But Sataputra Prabhu has made documentaries about it, and also... what's that, Sannyasi in America? Dhanavir Maharaj. Yeah, he's also. I showed them to you twice, I think. So you should have a clear understanding. That's how it works.
So, what is the distance between the moon? What is the distance? Is that the distance? That what's the distance which you're talking about?
Yeah, it's from the Earth going up to those, next planetary system. Mm-hmm. We're talking about planetary systems, like that. So you know the. The Bhagavatam describes there's the seven planetary systems, then there's the Earth, then there's Swarga, then there's Mahatapa, like that. So each one, and it gives the distances. And then it says Brahmaloka, which is the highest Satchaloka, that's millions and millions and millions of miles above all the others. Much higher. Otherwise it becomes confusing. Especially in modern science, because it's clear that the sun is further away than the moon. It's quite clear.
There's a bit of confusion because Prabhupada seems to be referring to distance and not the same place. I understand that the sun may be coplanar, in the same plane as the earth, and the moon may not be. But Prabhupada here uses a time-speed distance, almost kind of. So Prabhupada is saying that at that speed it will take 7 months, almost to suggest that the moon is from a distance point of view further.
Further, yeah.
So that's a bit confusing.
So but Prabhupada said in 76-77, if you go through the conversations, he's continuously instructing his disciples to begin the Bhaktivedanta Institute, continuously. It was almost one of his most primary emphasis in the final 2 years, he was very emphatic. And he said to them, he said, you explain it. Because Prabhupada wasn't a scientist. He said, you explain it. Use your scientific brains to create the models and explain it. So even Prabhupada's writing it in a particular way, but Prabhupada himself was not a scientist. And even Prabhupada, he wanted the devotees to go to South India to find models of the universe, which eventually happened like that. So he was instructing. And even I've told you before, Hari Sori Prabhu says that Prabhupada had written something in one of the purports, and Hari Sori Prabhu was reading it in the next room. And he walked in and said, Prabhupada, what you've written appears to be wrong. And then Prabhupada looked at it and he said, oh yes, it is. I've made a mistake. So, you know, Prabhupada was not presenting things from just a purely scientific point of view. And the end of the fifth canon of the Bhagavad Gita is very scientific. Prabhupada was more presenting from a devotional perspective. And he said to his scientific disciples, he said, you work all of this out and you present it. So, any points?
I always felt more with Roma and the same. Especially I noticed on Pratana with the Spanish movie. And exactly on 21 minutes, something confuses me. He was first explaining. The sun is first, the moon is second, the rat is, and each one is bigger than the next one. And then he goes to explain, he gives a picture of Ratu between. Between the earth and sun, between the earth and moon, and that's not possible. So that's really confusing. And that's before that, he explained.
Don't lose too much sleep about it.
Sorry?
Don't lose too much sleep about it.
Well, we have to use the brain, aren't we?
Yeah, so then speak to the scientific devotees. Write to the Bhaktivedanta Institute and speak to them.
I don't know, I wanted to write because the. You know, like...
Yeah, write to them.
It's presented and I really wanted to show to some people outside.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that it's not logical, so I better do not do it, you know, like...
Okay, so write to them, get an explanation. Just make sure you're sleeping properly, that's the main thing. Don't get too...
Could it be that the orbit makes Rahu at some point closer than the moon?
As far as I understand... the sun's further than the moon, and Rahu may be even further in terms of its sphere, but they're all crossing in different. I mean, we don't know how the universe is actually working. So if Rahu comes in between the sun and the moon and the earth, then I mean, it's far more powerful than what we can really understand. So I don't get worried about it. But the least important thing on my agenda at this point in my life. I'm more worried about what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow. So. Because that's important. But how the universe is working. I mean, the scientific devotees can work it out. We're building the planetarium in Mayapur. The planetarium will be there soon, in the next, what is it now, next 7 years. The planetarium will be there, so then we'll see how it all works. And then when we go to Mayapur and we see how it all works, we still won't understand it. So then you just go down and have breakfast, and then everything's good. Yeah. Hover basis of the deities, go to class, have breakfast, and chant your rounds, and who cares? Really. So, we try to understand it the best we can, but it's very hard to understand these things. In the course of the battle, the war field became strewn with the severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring in their teeth, still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from these severed heads. Similarly, many arms decorated with ornaments and clutching various weapons were strewn here and there, as were many legs and thighs, which resembled the trunks of elephants. Many headless trunks were generated on that battlefield. With weapons in their arms, those ghostly trunks, which could see with the eyes in the fallen heads, attacked the enemy soldiers.
It appeared that the heroes who died on the battlefield immediately became ghosts, and although their heads had been severed from their body, new trunks were generated. And these new trunks, seeing with the eyes in the severed heads, began to attack the enemy. In other words, many ghosts were generated by to join the fight, and thus new trunks appeared on the battlefield.
So how do you like this book? And how do you like being a member of this religion? Because our religion has some pretty amazing explanations of things. But I like it. And it's exciting. I like it. I wouldn't be anywhere else. It's exciting. Because people are getting their heads cut off, right? And the body is leaving, and then they become ghosts, and the ghost is picking up different parts of bodies and using it to keep fighting. This is good stuff. This is good.
People from Sivaloka can do it.
What's that?
People
from Sivaloka. Yeah. Can do all these things. Yeah, ghosts can do it. Ghosts can do all these things. So we're just waiting for Hollywood to make a movie out of all this, because this stuff is good.
PlayStation, so it's really exciting.
Yeah, much better. I don't play PlayStation. Fully
you
ready.
Don't play.
Huh? But you talk about it.
Not
yeah, see? And probably watches boxing matches as well. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Aravata, Indra's carrier elephant, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Aravata's legs. And with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. Jogesh, you want to read?
The word Vahan refers to the soldiers on horseback who protected the legs of the carrier elephants. According to the system of military arrangement, the leg of the elephant bearing the commander were also protected.
So nice, the way the battles used to be. There's no bravery anymore, there's no chivalry anymore, there's no courage anymore in the battlefield. I mean, not that there isn't, but not like it used to be. Before, if you wanted to fight, you had to fight to the death. These days, there's weapons, and as soon as guns were invented, it destroyed battles. Okay. That's how the samurai were defeated. They were great warriors, but then they just came and shot them, and that was it. So unfortunately, this is, you know, warfare is not what it was. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who was expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type, known as Bala, which were extremely sharp. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon, known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prasa, tomara, rishtis, and other weapons. But whatever weapons he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. Oh dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. A giant mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants, all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. O my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, cut them to pieces, pierced them. Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely. With the sound of thunder, they began to shower live coals. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Sambhataka fire, which appears at the time of dissolution. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere, before everyone's vision in a furious flood. While this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons, who were expert in such illusions, the soldiers of the demigods became morose. O king, when the demigods could find no other way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resemble the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders. Dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kastuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings, the Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. As the dangers of a dream cease, when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as he entered the battlefield, indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. O king, when the demon Kala Nemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took his trident, welded and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon, he killed the enemy, Kala Nemi, along with his carrier, the lion. So, Janeshwar, you'd like to read this?
In this regard, Srila Mahacharya says, Kala Nemi alaya sarve kadina yahata api chukve no shivita shanta punas tenayva patita. Kala Nemi and all the other demons were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, and when Shukracharya, the spiritual master, brought them back to life, they were again killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Any points here?
Is it the same Kala Nemi who was born as Krishna?
I think so. Because the demons didn't receive the nectar. Mohini came and took the nectar, she gave it to the demigods, right? And then the demons attacked the demigods because they're upset.
No, but the demigods must have become quite strong because of drinking the nectar. Then why have you been sort of vanquished by the demons?
Bali Maharaj is doing it. Because Bali Maharaj is extremely powerful, so he's doing it. Just like you see, Dhruva Maharaj fought all the Yakshas by himself. Prahlad Maharaj was extremely powerful. This is like the king. The king's extremely powerful. You'll see in the next chapter that he fights with Indra directly. Indra is 10 times more powerful than all the other demigods. All the demigods are extremely powerful, but Indra is like 10 times more powerful than all of them.
Is this moment this pastime took place before Vamana Deva appearance or after?
It's before Vamana Deva, as far as I understand. Because Vamana Deva is coming soon. So.
Yes, because Shukracharya is still with the demon, so it can't be before. Just Shukracharya was a Bali or something, because he didn't obey him.
Yeah, as far as I understand this before, I think this is chronological, what's happening at this point. So, how did the demigods win? Yeah, when the Lord Himself appears. So this is how we become successful, when Krishna steps in. Because Prabhupada once said to Brahmananda Prabhu, he said, ISKCON is not going on because of you. It's going on in spite of you. So ISKCON's not going on because of us. Right? It's going on in spite of us. In other words, if Krishna wasn't involved, this movement would have fallen apart years ago. So the demigods are winning. Why? Because the Lord himself gets involved. And you see all through the Bhagavatam, this is what takes place. Whenever there's difficulty, Krishna gets involved and then everything becomes rectified. So it's basically Krishna. So hopefully before we die, we'll give Krishna the credit. And we'll understand the Bhagavatam. That actually it's Krishna who's doing everything. At this point in time, we're like 50-50 or 60-40 or something. We understand Krishna is involved, but we also take a certain amount of credit.
This is Krishna Mari
Thereafter, two very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord. With his sharp club, the demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that enemy also. So you have to be very foolish to directly attack Vishnu or Garuda. It's very foolish. But still, that's the nature of demons. Demons are foolish and they do the wrong thing. So last week we read the qualities of the demigods, and now we'll read the qualities of the demons. So which chapter of Bhagavad Gita is that?
16.
Okay. So does everyone remember the qualities of the demigods which we discussed last week? Okay. Does anyone remember last week?
The main quality is fearlessness, but main quality was surrender to Krishna.
Yeah. That's the overriding. Krishna Kesharana. That's the overriding.
Is that your meaning, main qualities of devotees or something else?
Main what?
Last time we were going for each quality of a devotee.
Yeah, we were reading from the beginning of chapter 16, but then 26 qualities of a devotee, that's a different list.
Oh, okay.
It's not this list. We were reading from Bhagavad Gita, different list. Many of the qualities are the same, but not the same. Okay, now a demon. What is the first quality of the demon?
Pride.
Pride.
Arrogance.
Krishna says pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature or sanaprita. So the first one is pride. So what is the nature of the demons? They're proud.
I am the greatest.
Yeah, they have this quality of pride. Now, it is said that in Kali Yuga, the demon and the devotee is in the same body. So that is something that we, as devotees, we constantly battle with, is pride. We become puffed up. Prabhupada would always say, do not become puffed up. Because pride ruins our devotional service. When we become proud. And as we said last week, pride often borrows the cloak of humility. So you can act very humble externally, but actually we're proud. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this is the most prevalent anatta is pratishta, which is the same thing. The desire for recognition is pride. So this is a demoniac quality. It's in us. We have to gradually take it out. How do you take it out? You stay in the association of devotees, because devotees will tell you that you're puffed up. They'll let you know. If you try to make advancement outside of the association of devotees, you'll think you're doing okay. But when you're with devotees, they'll let you know. Devotees are very good at letting you know what your problems are. That's their blessing. Arrogance, conceit, anger. So anger is a quality of which mode of the material nature? It's in both. It's in passion and ignorance. It's a lower quality. So when we become angry and controlled by anger, these are lower modes of nature and is the nature of the demoniac demoniac persons. You see, those who are demoniac, they became angry very easily. So it's based on pride, because when we think we are superior to someone, when we are, when someone steps upon us, or we feel like they are becoming superior to us, we become angry in response. So anger is a demoniac quality. It's based on the lower modes of nature. And you'll see that devotees, generally, they will not become so angry. Anger has to be controlled. Rupa Goswami says that at the very beginning of Nectar of Instruction. You must control your anger. But if you're proud, you become angry very easily. Yeah. Different types of desires. Subtle desires or gross desires. Harshness and ignorance. These qualities belong to the demoniac nature. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with divine qualities. So what are we? Are we devotees or demons? Yeah, we're a mixture. Arjuna is pure. He has the good qualities. And we are somewhere in between. We're proud, because it says here, pride is the quality of the demon. We are proud. But if we look at the list of devotional qualities, we're also trying to cultivate them. So we're mixed devotees at this point in time.
The last sentence is Krishna says, no, do not worry, Arjuna, for you are born with these qualities. So, Satya Sarasara says, lot of stress on that born with these qualities, and he was talking about the importance of President Krishna, Yanka Krishna, he was saying that it is so important that we, like, Yanka Krishna, follow during Gadadan Krishna, then only a child who has all divine qualities will be attracted to them. Otherwise, there are so many demonic qualities, and we have to take extra effort in trying to change the child. And you are giving the example of someone in the US who was so particular about doing the government and stuff nicely, and that devotee has two children, and he said that you can see the difference. He has done the government so meticulously, and you can see the children are looking so divine. But they appear to be having lots of divine qualities. So he said, why not reduce the effort and have children like by doing the government and have such nice qualities?
Yes, the Prabhupada said, chant 50 rounds the day that you try to conceive the child, like that. Put yourself in good consciousness. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, invite the devotees to your house for a program, the evening that you're going to conceive. Purify the atmosphere, and then conceive. So follow these things and get a good devotee. I doubt you'll get someone who has all the divine qualities. Yeah, follow the Jyotish as much as you can. Consult with your astrologer. Most important thing is to chant the Maha Mantra. That's the most important thing. Okay. O son of Prita, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me about the demoniac. Those who are demoniac work for the Australian government. Oh, sorry. That was a different Bhagavad Gita. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. So these qualities, these are very important qualities, which are demoniac, right? Not knowing what is to be done and what is not to be done. So a devotee must understand what is to be done and what is not to be done. And eventually we have to learn to act upon it. Those who are, because Krishna already covered this in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, why is it that I understand I should do something, but then I do not follow that? And Krishna says, it's because of lust. It's because of the lower modes of nature. So as devotees, we need to gradually control ourselves and gradually overcome our lower natures and the effects of the lower modes of material nature. Understanding what is to be done and then doing that as well. That is a devotee. We understand the philosophy, but we also have to practice the philosophy. Eventually we have to get control of our mind and senses. Demoniac person, it takes time. Devotees struggle for years with these things. Getting control of the mind, getting control of the senses, acting properly, not just speaking the philosophy, but actually living the philosophy. It takes time. But we have to continuously be going forward and purifying ourselves.
Can you do it yourself? Can you do it yourself?
Purify yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Through sadhana. Yeah.
Or do you need the mercy?
You need association. That is mercy.
Okay.
If you want to become pure, you have to associate with advanced devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior. So demons are unclean. So cleanliness is extremely important in Krishna consciousness. It can't be emphasized enough. We have to become clean. We have to understand what is cleanliness. We did that seminar on cleanliness last year. I see devotees all the time doing things which are just not clean. Even devotees have been devotees for a long time. They don't understand what is cleanliness. Prabhupada was very emphatic about devotees being clean. My spiritual master personally trained me on many occasions on how to be clean. And he would pick me up if there was something wrong and he would immediately see that. Even after I've said it 20 times over the last 10 years, 11 years, I still see different devotees putting their pen in their mouth.
Yeah.
Disgusting. And then what are you going to do? You put your pen in your mouth and then you start running. It's disgusting. It's contaminated. It's low class. So devotees have to understand what is cleanliness, because it purifies, it uplifts the consciousness. And what is proper behavior? What is proper sadachar? Vaishnav sadachar. How to behave properly as a devotee. This needs to be learned. We have to be trained in these things. That is the purpose of ISKCON, because we do not know. We come from a malecha culture. Even Indian people these days don't understand things properly. So we have to train devotees what is proper behavior so they'll act properly. This purifies the consciousness. Sadachara is very important. That's why Lord Chaitanya, he instructed Sanatana Goswami to write the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And the Hari Bhakti Vilas is all the proper behavior of a devotee. How a devotee should act and behave. This is seen in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. How a devotee acts, how he behaves. How a devotee should serve prasad. What is the proper way to serve prasad? What happens in Chaitanya Charitamrita? When there's a feast, do they get out the bain marie? Right. Everyone sits down in rows, right? And the devotees go along and they serve the prasad nicely. Now in ISKCON, even when it's not, when there is availability, the reason we use the bain marie is because there's so many people now, we can't do the sit-down system. But you see, when you can do the sit-down system, devotees still follow the other system. But the proper system is you should sit down and everyone should be served nicely. That's important. This is Vaishnava etiquette, Vaishnava culture. We should not become lazy. So what is proper behavior? There's so many details on that. And truth. A demon always tells lies. And you see, what's the most important... what's the most prevalent quality in Kali Yuga now?
Nice.
It's practically dishonesty. Just like they gave the budget the other day. And then if you listen to the radio, I turned on the news tonight to see what was going on. And that's all they're talking about, the budget. He lied, he lied, he lied. He said he wouldn't do this and now he's done it. But we all know these things are going to happen. Right. And what happened yesterday in Australia, they had protests on the street. There were protests over the budget. A new watch. Because this is already happening in South America. Brazil's had major problems. Huge protests about the way the government has been treating. In Greece, recently, huge riots and protests. And Australia will also go in that direction in the future. This is the beginning now. Because the taxes will become higher. It says all this in the 12th canto of the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The taxes become higher. And it says the citizens will go and live in the hills. To escape the taxes of the government. So what does that mean? Yeah, you keep saying but when you come, I won't have enough food to feed everyone. That's the problem. And we have to get these farming communities together because eventually people will have to go to the farms. At the moment we don't have enough to eat. We had another calf on Sunday. A bull, a baby boy, has come. Very auspicious. Name is not given yet. We're still deciding. So name will be there probably next couple of days. Very auspicious. So in the future, we want to use the bulls. We want to milk the cows, grow the vegetables, like that. Will be necessary.
Government start taxing the farming.
Yeah. Then they will have to come there and get the tax. They say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. So this is the atheistic doctrine, which has taken over the planet practically. Everything is just created by chance. Everything is just created by material manifestation. Nothing is coming from any supreme, and this is actually becoming a doctrine in the world these days. Just like they have the World Parliament of Religions. A couple of years ago they came to Melbourne. Braji Krishna Prabhu came for the World Parliament of Religions. So now they have the World Parliament of Atheists. Because they say it's not fair that we're being biased. There's too much imbalance in society. We have to have atheists. We will prove that there is no God. And they become very upset about this person who does not exist. This doesn't make sense. Why are they so upset? If he doesn't exist, then what's your problem? He doesn't exist, so what's your problem? But they become very upset. There is no God. You see them sometimes on their YouTube videos. There is no God. There is no God. Well, who cares, man? If you don't believe there's a God, then there's nothing to talk about. So why are you so upset? Obviously because there is someone. You deny it, but obviously there is a person there.
At this point, you should remember in India, there was Narendra Modi. He has become the Prime Minister. And he loves his pond very much. He comes to Ahmedabad Temple. He attends the Rath Yatra. And people really appreciate very much. In Gujarat.
So that will help us. That's good.
Some change.
Yeah.
You see, Congress to.
Yeah. India will be perfect now.
Yeah.
India is the best country. It's the most organized. Prabhupada said India will always be 50 years behind the West. Always. It will be 50 years. They'll never get it together in India. It'll never be like the West, because it's not meant for that. It's not meant for economic development. It's not meant for that. It's meant for tapasya. India is a sacred place. It's meant for spiritual advancement. When they try to get it together materially, it never works. Even though at the Commonwealth Games, they fixed up the Delhi airport, but you walk through, it's all still, there's a bit of the roof falling off, and it's just like, it's India, it'll never work. So, it is being said here, that they think that everything is just caused by something material, but it's not a fact. And we will argue the point with them. They're trying to make the atheistic doctrine the doctrine of the earth. So we have to push very heavily the other way. And now we have this Prime Minister in India, at least he's favourable towards this country. If you go to Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan, And you read his little notebook, you know, which is in the shelf in his museum. And you see Prabhupada, when he was going to meet Indira Gandhi, and he made notes in the notebook. And interesting, because he writes the notes, he says, no slaughterhouses. You know, and he said, everyone in the parliament must be initiated brahmana. And he says, in all the factories, at lunchtime, there has to be sankirtan. And he was actually taking this to Indira Gandhi. Prabhupada was serious about these things. So this is what we have to present to the world. Otherwise, the world just becomes more and more atheistic. Following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and who have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. So a few weeks ago, Barack Obama said he wanted to put more emphasis on alternative energy sources to stop the greenhouse gas emissions. And immediately the Republican Party, the opposite party, they immediately protested. They said, no, the most important thing for America at this point in time is that everyone should have a job. That is more important than the environment. So unbeneficial works, which are meant to cause harm, that's what the demoniac person is engaged in. And you see the world these days is all unbeneficial works. Becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. That's why devotees, we should be the leaders of the green movement. Should be the devotees who are practicing it the most. But unfortunately that's not true. The devotees are not practicing it very nicely. Devotees use plastic bags and paper plates and everything more than everyone else. Taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac, thus illusioned, are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. Impermanent means they think this world is temporary. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. So Krishna says this later in this chapter. He says the three gateways to hell are lust, anger, and greed. So these are the principal demoniac qualities. So these are three things that we have to look within our consciousness and remove the most. Because we are lusty, we get angry, and we are greedy. So these things will lead us away from devotional life. They keep you in the material world. But to get out of the material world, we have to go in the opposite direction. We have to overcome these lower qualities. And we'll read one more verse. This verse is very nice. A demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So we see it. Even in this day and age, people will kill their family members just to get some wealth. That's how demoniac the world has become. So unfortunate. Right? In Australia and India, everywhere, all over the world. They kill your own family just to get some wealth. Happened here in Albert Park. Remember a couple of years ago? The guy around the corner suffocated the mother and the father and then drove them and buried them outside of Melbourne just so he could get $800,000, which he had to divide between his four brothers anyway. So it means he only got, you know, $200,000, $300,000. That's all he got. And he got caught and now he's in jail for 30 years or something. So this is happening even here in Albert Park. Such a peaceful, pious suburb. Actually, Middle Park, I think currently in Melbourne, has the highest rate of murders in Victoria. Middle Park. Because they've had two or three murders in the last 12 months or so. A couple of shootings down there, places like that. Just in between here and St. Kilda. It's a demoniac nature. It's the material world. There's only one good place on this earth. Actually, there's no good places on this earth. This earth is not a safe place. What's that?
Aren't you scared in the farm?
Am I scared in the farm?
So lonely.
I'm more scared in Middle Park. In the farm. The farm is... What's going to hurt you at the farm? You never know. You're going to get killed if you live in Middle Park. So. Farm's much safer. Okay, so we'll stop here. Tomorrow night we'll go through chapter 11. There's not many purports in 11, so read the whole chapter. But there's some key purports. Prabhupada makes some important points. Srila Prabhupada, keep your eyes open.